Welcome to Emotional Sobriety.
What does it mean to take responsibility for your existence? Am I responsible for my existence? Somebody said existentialism means that somebody else doesn't take a bath for you, which is an interesting way to put it, right? And emotional sobriety is very existential in that way. It's about us taking responsibility for our own lives, for what we've created in our lives, for what we are experiencing in our lives, for the quality of our lives, for the problems that we're having, even more so for the how we're dealing with or our response to the problems we're having. See, that's the core of this issue. And it's a challenging thing. I mean, to be able to be that radically responsible for ourselves. And it is, it's the road. Scott Peck called it the road less traveled. You know, we're in a culture that promotes blaming other people for your ills and for your problems and for your issues, which there's no denial that we're victims of things. We're not saying that. At least I'm not saying that. But the issue is how we deal with things that victimize us.
Yeah. Whether there's one thing to be victimized by something, but it's another thing to be a victim. It's a there victim it. Mentality is what we talk about. That's the thing. It's like, yeah, we're never denying that shit happens, and shit happens to all of us, and it's not predictable. So I had somebody in session yesterday that just said, you know, it's one thing after another. I said, I think that's the definition of life. I mean, I think that just means we're still alive. It's one thing after the other. And we've got to deal with it. And that doesn't mean and by the way, responsibility doesn't mean we can't have all kinds of feelings about it. I can be pissed off about it. That's okay. It's like, just as long as I'm not going to just sit down and, or like my old sponsor used to say, if you just hold on to anger too long, it becomes infected and it becomes resentment. It's how we respond. That's why it's called, and you've said that a million times, that's why we call it a responsibility.
I'm reading something that is, it's totally in line with what you're talking about. And first, I just want to say that the great thing about this podcast is it is in real time emotional sobriety. And emotional sobriety isn't everything's great, which is what I wanted to say when asked the question, how are you? I don't feel great. I feel aware. And that's good. But great wouldn't be the right word for it. And I love when I'm an audience to this podcast, the sort of connection and vulnerability. And that's what I want to talk about. From the book I referred to in an earlier podcast, The Myth of Normal by Gabor Maté, he talks about our need for two things to be well or emotionally sober in our language, connection and authenticity. Need to be both, right? And I wanted the connection, but I was afraid to be authentic because I didn't have the right thing to say, right? That just sort of came to me. And we all know from addiction, right? When we are full of secrets and we lose our community of support, right? We aren't being authentic with them. We need their connection. We don't believe we can tell them the truth and be loved unconditionally. And even in recovery, if we're in an environment where, like imagine someone who is a gay in a homophobic AA meeting, right? You know, can't be authentic. Or someone who's an atheist in a very, you know, our more religious members type of meeting, or someone who has a drug story that is being told, we don't talk about that here, right? We need to be able to be authentic, and we need connection, and we need both of them. So, you know, my response ability is what Gabor Maté does with that word. It's the ability to respond in an authentic way in my community is essential to good emotional sobriety. And I have a responsibility to the community to make sure we're always listening for someone who needs to be heard, being inclusive, avoiding any kind of talk that would be alienating. Even if we start the meeting talking about politics, you know, if it has a liberal slant, what happens to the conservative that walks into the room in need of a meeting, or vice versa? Either way, we need to really keep that sort of balance. And these two factors are just so essential to good health. And I have to advocate for myself, and I also have to be that member of the community that sort of demonstrates pro-social behavior, like, you know, making it easy for others to connect too.
Connection and authenticity reminds me of adding more self. We talk a lot here about adding more self. And that was actually a question from a member of our community, Alan, as they wanted some clarification on what that meant, adding more self.
Well, you said it in one word. When you said authenticity, I think that that's a great summary of what it means to add more self, is to bring your own resources to the situation, is to look inside yourself and to really see what the situation means to you, and to have the courage to represent yourself in that situation. You know, a lot of people don't know how to do that, or are afraid to speak their mind or declare what they want or what they would like in a situation.
Representing ourselves doesn't mean we have to have a debate, or we've got to be something right and somebody else is wrong. It's like representing ourselves is inclusive. There's a woman, I've been reading some of her books lately, and she has the greatest comeback in the world when somebody challenges something that she's just sharing. And she just said, "Works for me." You know, and it's just, and she just uses the hell out of that. And it's like, there's nothing anybody can do with this. It's perfect. It's what we need to be doing.
That's adding more self. See, that's an example of it. Or if we had a situation and you're telling me, well, you said, or your attitude was this way, you said this, da, 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 and I experienced myself very different. Then all I would say is, well, I have a different experience than you. I don't say you're wrong. That's not what I did. See, that's the debate that Tom's talking about. That's the quibbling about what is the reality. There's going to be two realities to it. I can juxtapose my reality and say, look, the way I experienced myself was like this. I'm here and you experienced me very different. I'm surprised that there's such a difference in our experience.
My first book, one of the chapters of my first book was called Conversations to Convey. It was about, don't have conversations to convince, but have them to convey. Convey information back, exchange information. And we don't do that very much.
Well, because see, if I'm dependent on you, I've got to convince you that you're wrong and I'm right, so I'm okay.
See, mainly I need your support that I'm right, instead of just the fact that I don't know if it's right even. It's just like, it's what my experience is, what you said.
Yeah,
like,
well, and I can see that even would be more honest, Tom, wouldn't it? If I was in a situation and I'm feeling threatened at that point by what the other person's position is, and I say, you know, I'm wondering if you were able to support my reality here for a minute, or just to try to look at it from my side. That would be wonderful. Me, right?
Well, yeah, you're right. And I'm thinking, we're also saying, I'm not asking you to deny yours.
No, I'm just saying, can you have empathy for mine, right? And see, that's adding more self, Patrick, too, is asking for what we want.
Yeah.
And that's a very difficult thing for a lot of people to be able
to. And it's not a demand.
No, it's the difference.
Conveying, right, like Tom said.
Like, conveying is a great way to contextualize it or to frame it, because see, that's what we know. The difference between a request and a demand is what happens if someone says, no, I'm not able to give you that right now. You want that support and I'm just not able to, I'm too upset. And if it's a demand, then I get angry about it. If it's a request, I get sad. That's the difference. Wow, I really would have liked that.
Right. It's back to Ken Kai's back, who wrote the handbook to higher consciousness. I don't know if you remember that, back in the 70s, long before the codependency language. And that he talked about identifying demands and up. He called them up leveling. I think these days we would call them upgrading or whatever. But he called it up leveling it to a preference, and just pointing out the thing that we point out. It's not original, but it was really just powerful to make it so much a point, which is if I don't get what I prefer, I'm disappointed. If I don't get what I demand, you know, I'm devastated. I'm pissed off. I've been wronged.
Another sort of throwback term is nonviolent communication.
God, everybody should read Marshall Rosenberg's book. I mean, he can say the simplest damn things, and it's so wise. And it's like you go like, why didn't I think of that? You know, and he's just on point, and he did it with his whole life. He helped everything from individuals to nations, you know, deal with stuff like that. It's a beautiful book on nonviolent communication.
And I have these irrational fears about stating these needs because I think they'll create conflict. And conflict builds intimacy. It doesn't detract from it, right? Like it's good to know where everybody
stands. Say that again,
stands.
Joe. That's a scary thought, what you just said, and it's really important.
Conflict builds intimacy. It doesn't threaten it. I had someone say to me, I don't know exactly what I was saying, but it was about how, you know, I'm Mr. Nice Guy. I want everyone to like me. I'm always considerate of other people's concerns. And they said, that's great, Joe, but that is not my experience of you. and that I didn't feel threatened by that at all. I was curious. Yeah, tell me more, right? You know, like it was a real great way to sort of, you know, take the conversation in a different direction. And it was, I was able to receive it well. And it was a brilliant little bit of word use.
That's a piece that we spend unconsciously, I think, just all kinds of effort and energy and time sidestepping and avoiding is listening to people's feedback, either directly or indirectly about ourselves. But especially in the program, how many of us have had lots of experience at this point of finally being open to listening to how other people perceive us and learning from it? It doesn't matter what they're right. It's not they're right, I'm wrong. It's like, you know, I see you guys as something. I don't see you the same way you see you. You know, it's valuable information for us to just, you know, we could do that. We could do that one. We could do it. Make a note of that, Patrick. We could do that one time. We could just sit here today and do that experience of have a group with the four of us and just talk to each other about how we perceive each other.
If you're swimming out to sea, doing laps or whatever, I don't know why you'd be doing that, but you're the one, if you swam out into the ocean, you're the one responsible for coming back. you know, somebody might not be there necessarily to toss you a life raft. And I think that when I would flail in conflicts in my earlier era, I would always be hoping for the other person to throw me a life raft. Or to provide me with an off ramp, or, you know, which is just a code word for just to validate my point of view, or, you know, maybe I, you know, I was in a zero sum kind of mentality. You know, this was something I had to win with the other person.
The emotional sobriety thing is basically being able, and this is something we learn and do better as we go along, is seeing these kinds of things as difficult as they are as opportunities. You know, you're using it as an opportunity to learn more about yourself. Hell, you're even using the opportunity to be in this conversation to kind of process some of that stuff out loud with us. We can be learning all the time, even if our relationship we're in particular doesn't actually survive it. That doesn't mean it's a lost cause. We've learned every experience. That's another piece about emotional sobriety. We should be learning. And that's every single day of our lives. That's a big part of my job. Maybe at the top of the list.
I love that, Joe. Anything worth doing is worth doing badly.
Yep, that's right.
That's one of my favorite canards. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about was what Fritz Perls was saying about taking responsibility. I wanted to read you guys this.
Yeah.
Because he was the original one. So it's interesting when I hear people like Gabor Mate say, well, let's break the word responsibility into ability to respond, right? Because it came out of Gestalt therapy, all of this stuff. And so there's so much. That's where, you know, one of the things that I think that I'm glad I'm doing is showing us how we're standing on the shoulders of so many giants before us. Mm-hmm. And that it's great to bring those things in, but I also want to give those people recognition. Mm-hmm. A lot of pioneers back in the 50s and 60s that were really challenging a lot of psychoanalytic ideas. I mean, because psychoanalysis was so predominant in our culture with behaviorism. There you had two choices. It was either behavioral approaches to therapy or psychodynamic. And that mm-hmm. was it until the third force came in, which mm-hmm. was humanistic psychology. And mm-hmm. it opened up just, I mean, at that point in time, actually a therapist could sit across from someone and talk to them directly, face to face. Mm-hmm. Oh, before you couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And you weren't allowed to say, when people were trained in analysis, I remember Dr. Rader telling me this, he was allowed to make one statement over an hour. And he had to choose very carefully what he could say. And it had to be as brief as possible.
Jesus, I would lose that job so many times.
I said, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I would die. Me, too. I mean, we.
You know, the other, I want to say, but what you're saying is tapping this. But the other thing is we're also seeing, and not to take away anything away from anybody who has done that stuff, but when we see stuff like that, because you know, responsibility, the ability to respond. It's like you and, you know, I've seen one of my books or the responsibility two and four. It's in my books or you talked about. It's like what it is it's wisdom. Wisdom. We all come to wisdom. I was reading my meditation stuff with the meditations of Marcus Aurelius this morning, and he was describing the importance of developing empathy. He wasn't using the word empathy, but he was describing it exactly the way we would describe it, and saying this will make all the difference in the world in your relationships to other people. I mean, that's thousands of years ago.
That's right.
It's wisdom. It's just there's nothing original about wisdom. It's just there. And if we stay with it long enough, like we're doing, we get to tap into it. And we see in what you're saying is we recognize the other people who've been tapping into it also.
Oh, it's right on. And you can go back way back to Marcus.
Way back.
Go back to Sufi. I mean, a Sufi poet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
God.
Yeah, you read from that often. Yes.
I mean, that's the 12th century. I mean, there is a real wisdom tradition available to us that we can tap into. But listen to what Fritz says, because mm-hmm. he says it so well it's so articulate. He goes, if you take responsibility for what you're doing to yourself, this is where we come in, Tom. When somebody's presenting mm-hmm. something to us, we say, separate yourself and talk to the part of you that's making you depressed.
Yeah.
Right? That kind of thing. So if you take responsibility for what you're doing to yourself, how you produce your symptoms.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? How you produce your symptoms, how you produce your illness. He goes, how you produce your existence.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Isn't that an easy way? How you produce your existence, he goes, you get in touch with yourself. That's when growth begins. That's when integration begins.
Beautiful.
And you see,
that, Joe, that's what I'm reading in the book, too. That's what Gabor Mate is saying as well. It's like, let's look under the diagnoses and let's look at how we do this. And it's like I mean, there's no clearer way than what you just read from Fritz Perls. But it's like, that's completely about self-responsibility.
Totally responsible. And I love what Mate is doing, because he's trying to wake us up and say, hey, look beyond the diagnosis. But right now, we are a society, a culture that is focused on the right diagnosis.
Yeah.
I've got post-traumatic stress. I'm attention deficit disorder. I'm depressed. Mm-hmm. I'm not in any way belittling that. Sometimes we need to understand what we're experiencing. But more importantly is if we look at what Fritz is saying, how do you create or how do you deal with whatever's going on in your life?
I think the wisdom part, whether it be us or whether it be Pearls or whether it be Gabor, it's always about expanding your perspective. It's,
that's right.
It's the pan back. It's like, and for future reference here, I just want to point out with this book, and I appreciate you introducing me to this book, Joe, because I've loved this book. And man, does it cover some area. It's like somebody asked me, what's the book about? And I go like, I think it's about everything. It's like, you know, pretty much, but it's so good. But one of the things that I love about it, because it made me feel, now I'm honest, it's because it made me feel good about myself and about what we're doing. And that is the chapter that's called, I wrote it down here a minute ago, Oh, Show of Hands, The New View of Addiction. It's like, I'd be interested in your, just talking about this sometime, Joe. We are so doing what he's describing. It is like, it was so validating to me what he was describing, because I thought, oh my God, we are getting there. We're at us again, the wisdom is revealing itself and we're accepting it, but it's all about, it's emotional sobriety. It's you know, what I always call the big A. Why isn't there just one big A instead of AA and OA and all these other A's? It's like emotional sobriety is the big A.
We spell that E-H in Canada.
Yeah. Good. But I want to talk about that chapter some too. Sometime we do that. It'd be really good for us to do.
I just want to throw out there just briefly, part of taking responsibility is when we don't have strong legs under us, or when we're not feeling up to the moment, then calling that out in ourselves and letting that be a part of the mix, right? Yep. It's because I always think of taking responsibility, and the connotations for that is we're just on it, you know, and we're strong, and we have agency, and you know, we're finding a way to kind of be out in front of whatever the story of our lives is. But we can still be responsible, even in moments of weakness, you know, when we're flailing a little bit. There is a way back to the center, and it probably just has to do with being in alignment. That's where we are.
You're talking about humility.
Yeah, finding some way to communicate that.
My final thoughts, I want to quote another great sage. His name was Dennis, the late Dennis, who was a member of Toronto's Beyond Belief Agnostics and Free Thinkers group. And this is about our responsibility for whether we do or do not respond, you know, sort of picking our fights. Literally. And he came from a rural area. And he warned people who were quick to, you know, with a chip on their shoulder, quick to engage. He said, don't be fighting with pigs for three reasons. You can't win, you're going to get dirty, and the pigs love it.
Oh, my God, that's fun.
Tend your life. Tend your myth. Cultivate your narrative with whomever you are.